Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Jane Austen Wrecked My Life, Henry Johnson, and Vulcan Isadora.
I am happy to report that Jane Austen has not wrecked my life. That is the name of a new movie, Jane Austen Wrecked My Life. And no, she didn't do that to me. I've been reading Jane Austen over the years, most assuredly, like a lot of literate people do. And I think she's just a splendid writer. And I have a good time usually when I read her. So she did not wreck my life. But the poor main character of this movie does, in a sort of ironic, wry sort of way, feel that that has happened. I have to say that this year is the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth. So it's an appropriate time to remember and perhaps to celebrate the author of Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility and Emma and all kinds of other movies, novels, which have been adapted into movies over the years so often. This movie, Jane Austen Wrecked My Life, is not an adaptation of Austen, but it's a movie that kind of deals with the memory of Austen in the life of a contemporary woman. And it's not a heavy movie like that title might make it sound. And it's not really a bubbling comedy like you also might think with that title. It's somewhere sort of in between. The main character is a woman named Agathe Robinson. Agathe Robinson is a French woman. She has some English ancestry as well, and she runs a bookstore in Paris. And she deals, yes, sometimes in the works of Jane Austen. And we discover fairly early in the film that there's a tragedy in her life that she is still trying to get over. Both of her parents died in a horrible car accident in which she was also involved, although she escaped just with injuries, and she seems to be just fine now. But this has really, really traumatized her. She can't drive a car. She can't even ride in a car. So that's a little bit of backstory here. Then what happens is that she wins a fellowship. She is a writer and she's been working on a novel, not very seriously. She regards herself as somebody who runs a bookstore, not somebody who is a writer, but she's been kind of toying around with this. And the guy who works with her in the bookstore, who was sort of her boyfriend, she also seems to have a lot of inhibitions where romance is concerned. He, it turns out, has sent out her first chapters of this novel that she's sort of toying with. And yes, it won her this fellowship. The trouble is the fellowship, which is a Jane Austen fellowship or residency, is in England and she'd have to go to England. So she manages to do this. She manages to get on the boat and to go across the channel and to go to England. And then there, when she arrives, she is picked up by a young man from the residency. His name is Oliver. And he starts to drive her back to the big house where everybody lives during this residency. There's other authors there as well. And along the way, the car breaks down and you really expect these two are going to have a romance. Well, I'm not going to reveal what happens, but it certainly doesn't happen early in the movie. She gets to the residency and she has a little bit of trouble adjusting and settling in and all of that. And that's where a good part of the movie's humor comes from. She's really not sure she belongs there. She feels that she's an imposter. Somebody says to her, "You have imposter syndrome." She says, no, I'm a genuine imposter. But she is there now. She's at the residency and she's trying to get along. And of course, the residency has other eccentric people there. There's the old man who's kind of nominally in charge of the place. His wife really runs it. And he apparently is sinking into dementia and he's charming, but he's just not all with it. And there's a couple of rather eccentric writers as well and so forth and so on. And then, of course, we have our main character, Agathe, and Oliver, the young man who lives at the residency, who is a college literature teacher. And we do expect now that this romance will start to blossom. So once again, I will not tell you what happens. It's a likable movie. It's an amiable incredible movie. It's mostly in French. It's a little bit in English. And I had a pretty good time watching it. I can't say I got swept up in either the romance of it or the literariness of it, because it's not really, I think, a fully realized movie. It's a movie that is sort of toying with romance. It's kind of toying with literature and literariness, if I can use that word. And it doesn't really come to terms with anything in a full-fledged comic way or a full-fledged dramatic way. It's always sort of on the cusp. Now, it's a nice movie, and I did have a good time watching it. It's perfectly okay. I have to say, I've just recently finished watching a very new miniseries on TV, which is on PBS. It's in the Masterpiece series called Miss Austin, and it's a four-episode series, and I found it pretty dull. That deals with Jane Austen and her sisters and her parents, and it jumps back and forth in time. And I way preferred Jane Austen Wrecked My Life to the miniseries Miss Austen, although people interested in Austen should know that they're both out there right now. Anyway, Jane Austen Wrecked My Life. Neither Jane Austen nor this movie have wrecked my life. I wish it were a better, stronger, more exciting movie, but as it is, it's an interesting movie, and it's sort of fun to watch, and it's not awfully long. So anybody who's interested in Jane Austen or English literature generally, or maybe even literature generally, might want to check it out. Jane Austen Wrecked My Life will not, whatever else it does, wreck your life. Second movie I'd like to talk about today also has a kind of a literary cast to it. It's called Henry Johnson, a very bland title, I think. And it's the new movie by David Mamet, who is best known still as a playwright, a very important American playwright, and a somewhat important American filmmaker. Some of his movies, I think the very best one of all, comes from years ago. It's called Homicide. His best work as a movie maker is very good. And his best work as a playwright, I think, for example, of Glenn Ross is really extraordinary. He really has a great talent. I've spoken with him more than once. He's an interesting guy, or at least he used to be. Several years ago, he took an interesting bend in his life and career. He became all of a sudden, sort of overnight, he did this with an article in the Village Voice, he became a really hard right winger. He had always been sort of liberal and sort of a rebel against the rules and so forth, and now he is a big conservative, ultra-conservative, big follower and supporter of Donald Trump and all of that. And I think this probably has affected his work as an artist in some ways. For one thing, it's a very long time since he's made a movie, for better or for worse. Anyway, I was looking for signs of his new politics, or maybe his old politics, in the new movie Henry Johnson, and I can't say I could really very easily find them. It's a typical sort of a movie from Mamet in certain ways, which is to say it's very much about individuals, it's very much about challenges they face, it's very much about kind of moral questions. But he doesn't seem to come down on any real moral side, except for a very habitual stance of David Mamet's, which is that people at their core are pretty bad. He's always believed that. He believed that when he was a left winger. He believes that when he's a right winger. And that seems to me, if anything, to be the ultimate message of Henry Johnson. So if you're not in the mood for something pretty dark, then maybe stay away from this film. That said, the movie is also a real minimalist film. Mamet has never been a fancy filmmaker, that's for sure. But here we have a movie which is based on a play that he wrote and that has been staged. It's been performed as a play in the theater. And now he has transferred it into movie terms very, very directly. It's a real movie. We have cuts from one shot to another, from one person to another. You know, the movie has all the editing and the different points of view and stuff that we associate with a movie. However, it is very, very, very much a three-act play. And it just transfers that directly from the stage. And the three-act play is kind of an old-fashioned format, even in the theater. It's a very old-fashioned format in the movies. So you have to be really ready here, if you're going to watch Henry Johnson, for a film that is just about basically pairs of people talking to each other. Each one of the three acts is primarily a dialogue between two people, and one of those people more or less dominates the dialogue. So we have almost monologues along the way as well. But that is what Henry Johnson is like. So what they're talking about has got to be interesting, or the movie won't be interesting. I found what they had to talk about fairly interesting. So the first act is a younger man and what appears to be a slightly older man, but they're talking in an office and they're talking very much about a friend of the younger man. The younger man's name is Henry, and he's talking with his boss, and they're talking about a friend of Henry's. Henry has asked his boss to please give a job to this friend of his who needs to have a job waiting for him if he's going to get out of prison. And as this dialogue continues, we discover that Henry's friend, who is in prison, is there for a pretty horrible crime. I won't describe exactly what it was, but basically he caused a woman to have an abortion, basically, by causing a terrible physical trauma to befall her. And that's why he's in prison. And now Henry, his friend, not a close friend, oddly enough, is trying to get him out of prison and therefore has asked the boss to please help get Henry out of prison by having a job waiting for him. Well, the boss, it turns out, is pretty disgusted by this idea. So that doesn't go very well. The second act is a very long talk between Henry, who now himself is in prison, and his cellmate. Cellmate played, by the way, by Shia LaBeouf, who gives, I think, a very good performance. So, okay, now he's in prison, and the cellmate is beyond cynical. To him, all people are rotten. All people are just trying to get something out of each other. The only reason anybody ever does anything is to try to get something out of another person. So we have that dialogue, or more or less monologue, for a while. The third and shortest act takes place when Henry is apparently trying to bust out of prison, and they're coming for him, but he is holed up in a room with one of the prison guards. And now his long conversation is with the prison guard, who is a very nice older black man who talks with him in very interesting ways. And in some ways, it's the most interesting, but also the most puzzling of these conversations. None of these conversations fully adds up. There always seem to be gaps, holes, things that are missing. Perhaps we're meant to fill in those blanks on our own. I didn't find the whole film interesting enough to really want to fill in those blanks on my own. And therefore, the movie ended up being somewhat puzzling to me. I think Mamet intends it to be puzzling. I think he does not intend to be giving us definitive answers to things. I think he wants to suggest that the universe, especially the human universe, is a very, very complicated and dark place, and we will never fully understand one another, and it's all a hopeless quest. Perhaps that is David Mamet's new politics. I think it is also his old politics. In any case, it's a pretty dark message. I was interested in Henry Johnson while I watched it. I'm not sure I'll be thinking about it a whole lot afterwards. It's a little under an hour and a half long. If you're interested in Mamet as a writer, then by all means, check out Henry Johnson. It has all of his trademark dialogue, extremely stylized, short sentences traded back and forth like people playing a dark sort of ping pong. It has that very much. It's very much a David Mamet movie. You couldn't miss that signature if you tried. But I can't say I found it a very gratifying movie to watch. It's a little bit puzzling, really, really dark, as I keep saying. And well, I just have mixed feelings about it, and I don't wholeheartedly recommend it. Final movie I'd like to talk about today briefly is a movie called Vulcan Isadora. And this is a movie by a guy named Joel Petroikis, who also plays one of the leading roles. Petroikis makes very, very dark, very, very minimalist movies. They have low budgets. They don't really have a whole lot going on in them, and you have to kind of get absorbed in them if they're going to work for you. So here's what this new movie is about. And I have to say, I can't say very much about it because spoilers here would be really deadly. I will say that Vulcan Isadora, a puzzling title for me at first, turns out, and this is not explained in the movie, this is what a tire factory or tire store is called in Spanish-speaking lands. So that's what a Vulcan Isadora is. And what we have here is two men on a camping trip, sort of a camping trip. They're out in the middle of the woods. They're going along. They constantly have arguments. They constantly have quarrels, but they're obviously very, very close friends. And they're out there in the middle of the woods and they're getting lost. And it's very unclear where they're going or even where they think they're going. They're just out there in the woods and they're rolling along. And well, what's going to become of these two guys? And what is going on here, by the way? Okay. We get a little bit of a backstory here. It turns out that one of the guys is in trouble with the law. And when they get back to civilization out of the woods, he's going to be really have to go through a whole lot of stuff because he burned down a tire store in some sort of a horrible fire. And he feels very, very guilty about this. So the whole approximately first half of this movie, which is about an hour and a half long, is these two walking through the woods, bantering, chit-chatting, arguing, getting lost, finding their way. And we still have no idea where they're going. Okay, the second half of the movie, these two friends finally get someplace, which is just they're now in sight of the ocean. Okay, there's the sea. Okay, and they're up there. And now something's going to happen. Well, now this is where I'm really not going to give any spoilers. One of the two friends, in fact, both of them to some degree, have been toying with little explosives like firecrackers, little sort of firecrackers and what we used to call cherry bombs. They've been toying with these every once in a while, setting one of these off. Well, this turns out to play an enormous part in the second half of the movie when they have arrived at the ocean at the beach. So, something now really, really happens. Up until now, for roughly 45 minutes, virtually nothing whatever has happened. Now something really, really happens. And in the very last part of the movie, we're transported back to civilization, back to a town or a city where one of the main characters comes into contact with other people. And the whole movie winds its way to its very, very ambivalent and ambiguous and enigmatic resolution. I rather like Volcano Zadora. It is an annoying movie to watch, but it's different from anything else out there. At a time when almost all movies fall into formulaic patterns, and let's face it, most movies have always fallen into formulaic patterns, this film is really different, really unusual. And if you can wait that 45 minutes until we get up to the big change in direction, it's kind of worth watching. So in certain ways, certain quirky and strange and odd ways, I rather enjoyed Vulcanizadora the most of the three movies I talked about today. That said, however, Jane Austen Wrecked My Life and Henry Johnson are worth checking out in more conventional ways. So that is my story today, which I hope didn't wreck anyone's life.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Jane Austen Wrecked My Life, Henry Johnson, and Vulcanizadora.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.